Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBW 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and
105.0
AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and of course here I am, Al Warren, and Mr. David North Martino is off the baseball field.
I'm still a baseball player, Al.
Well, in my mind, you'll always forever be that star. I can never.
Oh, thank you.
Just because you've retired doesn't mean it's, it's not important. I mean, you know, it's a step
and
down.
I never even made the majors.
Well, no, but a step down trying to make the majors to being on radio.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
It's really sad.
It's a step up. It's a step up.
Step up. No. No, it's a, you're looking upside down. Anyway,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so anyway, we're having a great week. We have some great shows coming up. Of course, we have the exclusive American release of the interview with Lee Sansom, who was the bodyguard for Princess Diana, finally is releasing a book and speaking about it. So that'll be coming up on, I believe, September 1st is when it will air. So
great show.
Yeah, yeah, really, really interesting guy. We've already talked to him, and it's pretty, pretty good. It's pretty intense. But I will give one thing away.
Okay,
we'll give one secret away. The Queen is not a reptile, and she just so everyone knows, she was not behind the death. Okay, Princess Diana.
That's right.
So it's a little spoiler, but. You know, take away the anxiety for later. You know, people get all worked up about that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so now, now today we have a writer. It looks like a murder mystery author. And so let's welcome to the show, Miss Penny Bochen. Thanks for being on the show.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Al.
So, Penny, where did the writing bug start for you?
Well, I would say it started quite a while ago. I've always loved to write. I was the kid in English class that was secretly fist pumping under my desk when we would get a writing assignment instead of an oral report assignment. The last thing I wanted to do was get up in front of the class and speak. So I was always thrilled to be able to write. And so I've always loved to write. I've always been kind of right brain. I love to paint and draw as well. But I've always loved math too. So I think I've been able to access both sides of my brain. I did not pursue writing professionally initially when I went off to college. I knew I had to select a very practical major, so I chose accounting. It took me 2 years to figure out that that's what I wanted to do. I went in undecided, but I knew, like with my parents' financial situation, I really needed to have a job coming out of school. So I chose accounting and I enjoyed it very much. But once I got out of school, then I allowed myself to get back into right brain activities like painting and drawing and eventually writing, and loved being there. So in fact, one of the last corporate jobs I had, I headed up a reporting section for a large financial institution, and we produced the financial statements, but I got to do the write-ups that, and I know that's not exactly riveting, riveting reading, but somebody has to do the analysis and put it into words. So it was my job to do that. So I think that actually kind of sparked my interest, you know, sparked the fire to get me back into writing again and do much more interesting. I mean, obviously there can be a lot of mystery and suspense in financials, but, but you know, very, very dry writing, but I think that was what kind of, you know, got me going to go revisit, writing again. So it was fun to get back into it.
Yeah. So it's an interesting process. So how is it that you come up with the theme or the storyline behind one of your books?
Well, I always select my setting first. You know, I write about places that I've fallen in love with and I have a continuing love affair with, so that my readers also get a taste for the setting and they end up falling in love as well. So the setting comes first. And my first novel was set on the coast of Maine in an old family run inn set up high on a precipice overlooking the ocean. And it was a very natural place for me to set my first book because I thought mysteries would be a great, you know, place to put, or I should say the rocky, tumultuous coast of Maine is a great place to set a mystery. But also it was a place I fell in love with as a small child. My mother grew up in Maine. My grandmother lived there until she passed away. So every summer, with only one exception, we traveled to Maine to visit my grandmother, and we would take day trips. She lived in central Maine. So we would take day trips down to the coast, and I just fell in love with the coast. And you know, it was just a very natural place to write about when I started my first book. And that, so I've got three that are set on the coast of Maine, and I call it my precipice series because they each have the name, the word precipice in their title, but it's also known as the Elizabeth Pennington mystery series because Elizabeth is the protagonist.
Your location, your setting, like in this case, Maine, do you write it like you would write a character?
I think so, because I think the setting, the way the story, you know, once I have the setting, then the beginnings of a storyline start to fall into place. And then one by one, characters start introducing themselves. So I think the storyline could only happen in the places that I have chosen the setting. So these settings become a character, like with the Elizabeth Pennington mystery series, you know, set on the coast of Maine. You know, there are walks on the beach and clam bakes and lobster boats and ferry rides to an offshore island. There's a hurricane barreling up the coast. And the story would have a very different feel and really wouldn't work if it was set inland, and, you know, say in a city somewhere, you know, somewhere like Chicago in the middle of winter. It just wouldn't work. So I think the settings become critical to the story, and they become a character.
So your main character, when you said that, Elizabeth Pennington in that case, how do you develop a character? We get a lot of different explanations about characters and who they are to the writer and stuff and how they experience them. What's your dealing with your main characters, like, let's say, Elizabeth?
Well, they say that characters have at least a piece of the writer in them. And I would say Elizabeth has a lot of me in her, you know, back when I was in my 20s. You know, I describe her as the serious young professional that I remember myself being. And then, you know, I've got my two books that are in set in the Caribbean, and then that's Olivia. And she's even younger than Elizabeth. And I describe her as the kind of the wilder 20-something, the kind of a throw caution to the wind kind of gal that I wished I was back in my 20s. And then my protagonist in my latest release, Victoria, she's more, she's closer to my age, in her mid-50s. So there's a lot of me in her as well. But I guess I do view them as an extension of myself. As far as the other characters, not so much with the villains. At least I'd like to think that there's not a lot of me in my villains, but there has to be a little bit of me. And then other characters are, you know, people that I've either have come to know or have crossed paths with and have thought up a backstory for. I mean, I love to do, I do a bit of traveling, and I find myself in airports, and I do a lot of people watching, which is very entertaining. And I find myself taking notes and sometimes and coming up with characters based on people that have walked past me, and they've carried themselves in a certain way, and or I've heard, you know, snippets of conversations, and then I just start filling in the blanks and creating people, you know, characters that I've never met before, but that I've imagined. So they kind of come from all over the place, you know. But I think the protagonist, all three of my protagonists so far are probably most like me, and others are probably more like friends.
In creating your characters, do you have an inner monologue in your head? Can you hear your characters? Is that how you create dialogue?
I do hear it in my head, and I also see it. It's like I'm watching a movie. I think a lot of fiction writers experience that. I see it, so I write down what I'm seeing. But I'm not a planner when it comes to writing. I'm not much of a planner in life either, but I don't sit down and write an outline before I write. I know one mystery author who she does, which I think is very clever. She uses post-its to write down, you know, parts of the story. And then she's very, can easily move them around and put them in the order that she wants them to be in. But I'm not really that much of a planner. I am what they call a pantser. I write from the seat of my pants, and I love doing it that way because I don't always know what's coming around the corner. And sometimes I'm as surprised as my readers are, you know, what happens at a certain point in the story. I remember one time I was taking a break from writing, and I was on a treadmill. I had my headphones in, and I was just listening to music and just kind of, you know, walking along briskly and kind of rewinding what I had just finished writing, and then letting my brain just kind of keep going with the movie as I was listening to music and walking along. And I was following along the story, and all of a sudden the car that one of my characters was driving went off into a ravine. And I gasped right out loud. I'm like, oh, you know, and the reason I gasped was because, first of all, I didn't see it coming. But second of all, I had named my character after a good friend of mine. So I had just killed off my friend. That was a perplexing situation I had to get out of. But I love writing like that because I don't know what's going to come around the corner. And it's very entertaining. And I look forward to sitting down to write, because I never know where my characters are going to take me.
Yeah, I'm a pantser too, and I find that I've had similar situations where a character will just appear, maybe from another story or something, and you're very surprised by it. Have you ever had any characters that have, you know, really taken the plot kind of off the rails past where you really wanted to go?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it happens frequently. I mean, I can't think of, you know, a good example off the top of my head, but certainly even my protagonists will do things that will surprise me. And I think, well, that's not like her to do that. But then I realize I'm still getting to know her. You know, she's still revealing to me what, you know, her thoughts are, you know, what her intentions are. And so it's, we're getting to know each other. So it does happen quite a lot. And it's very entertaining when it does happen.
Well, so when you're writing a series, when you're trying to put that together, how do you keep track of subtleties that you've written about in previous books?
Well, I wish I was more organized about it than I am, because I find, I mean, some writers are extremely organized and they've got worksheets of every little detail, like, you know, what the, you know, eye color, you know, hair color, birthday, and, you know, car, you know, make of the car and so forth. And I actually do fill out, I've got this like 15-page survey that I fill out for my major characters. So I do jot all this stuff down, but there are plenty of things that I might throw in that aren't on that survey, but the survey is pretty specific. I mean, it even comes down to favorite foods, favorite drinks, favorite piece of clothing in their closet. And, you know, why is it their favorite? But there are plenty of things that don't get onto that survey. So, and I wish I was a little more organized with my details going forward, because I have to go back and reread. I have to go looking for that little detail. And, you know, it's a little, you know, eats up my time, which I really don't have, but it's also kind of fun to go back and reread my previous books too. Even if I'm just reading just a section of them, it's like, oh yeah, I remember that part. Oh, that was fun. I'm glad I put that in. So I'm not as organized as I should be, but then it allows me to go on a memory, you know, trip, you know, on the previous book. So that's kind of fun.
Now in your series, a person can pick up book two. They don't have to read them in order, do they? I mean, of course you'd like them to, but they do stand on their own.
Well, the Precipice series, actually, you really do have to start with the first one. I mean, at this point, I've got three. I've got Murder on the Precipice, Murder Beyond the Precipice, Murder Returns to the Precipice. You really have to start with the first one. But then that series is separate from the two books that I have in the Caribbean, The Empty Chair and then Over the Edge, which is the sequel to The Empty Chair. So those you have to read in order. But then my most recent one, The Woman Underwater, that's actually a standalone. So you don't have to have read any of my previous books to be able to enjoy that one. I've got brand new storyline, brand new characters, brand new setting too. You know, this one's actually set in Connecticut, because I had so many writers after I had the three in Maine, and then I have two in the Caribbean. I had so many Connecticut readers say, when are you going to set a book in Connecticut? Because, you know, I was born there. I, you know, lived there longer than anywhere else. I went to school there. We raised our kids there. So I said, well, of course I should write a book. I mean, I love Connecticut, and it didn't take me long once I had the setting to then start to get the threads of a storyline and have it start falling into place. So, so that was fun to be able to do a new setting like that.
Well, mentioning all, you know, the novels that you've written, have you found any motifs or recurrent themes in your work? And do you feel, if so, that that's been done deliberately or unconsciously?
That's a great question, because if you had asked me that, you know, a year ago, I would have said, no, I don't think there are any recurring themes. But, you know, the more I've been interviewed and had to really think about my work and go back and revisit each one, I'm realizing that the recurring theme in The Woman Underwater, or the theme in the Woman Underwater, is really about the strength of love. And then when I thought about it, I realized, well, gee, that's, I think I've been carrying this through all of them. I mean, there are other themes as well, but just the fact that, you know, the strength of love and that the power that it can compel people to do things that they didn't think they could do. They can hang on to hope, you know, go after dreams they never thought they could accomplish, stand strong in the face of adversity. And without love, you know, people are often destined to lose faith and let life's ambitions slip away and not, you know, and perhaps even resort to self-destructive actions. Right. So it was funny how when I first started thinking about the theme in The Woman Underwater, I actually had been carrying that through all of my novels, which was interesting.
So how do you create, like, what is your process? So when you, like, for instance, the new book, The Woman Underwater, where does it begin? Is it like a character that you create and then you put that character through a situation? Or is it an event or a situation that then you find a character? Like, which does it work for you?
Well, I always start with the setting. Mm-hmm. And then from there, the storyline starts to kind of filter into my brain. And as the storyline gets a little more solid and starts to move forward, then the characters start introducing themselves. So in The Woman Underwater, it was set in Connecticut, and, you know, I've lived there for many years. And so I just thought about all the things that I loved about Connecticut and also some of the iconic, some of the landmarks that I wanted to include in the story as well. That was kind of fun to do. But there are two settings in The Woman Underwater. The Victoria is the protagonist, and when the story starts, her husband has been missing for almost 7 years, and he'd been a teacher at an all boys private boarding school in a town that I've called Litchfield Falls. There is a Litchfield, Connecticut, but there's no Litchfield Falls. And I've had some of the early readers say, but there should be a Litchfield Falls in Connecticut. But so the school is set in Litchfield Falls, which is not too far from New York. And he disappeared one fall on a field trip with his students to New York City. And he disappeared without a trace, with no supposedly.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
No witnesses. The police had few leads to go by, and they quickly dried up. And they also never found his car. So as the story opens, he's been missing for 7 years. And in the state of Connecticut, someone who's been missing can't be pronounced dead until 7 years are up, or you have irrefutable proof that they are in fact deceased. So she's tormented by not knowing what's happened to him, and also the people around her are trying to convince her to move on with her life, that, you know, to snap out of it and move on for her sake and for the sake of her boys. They have two sons, but there's another wrinkle in the situation, in that their younger son is now a student at that school, and the infamous field trip that his father disappeared on is now coming up on the school calendar, and he really wants to go on it.
So when you write a book like that, do you have any sort of subtext or any sort of meaning that is below the story that you hope readers will pick up?
Well, I think it goes along what we were talking about before with the strength of love, because she is certain he's still out there. In fact, she's so certain, because since they were first married, he would always send a beautiful arrangement of the coral colored roses to her on her birthday. And even after he disappeared, the roses kept coming. So she takes that as a sign that he's still out there and that he will return. She's tried to, you know, she has a friend, Aviva, that she's tried to accuse her of sending the roses. And she said, no, it's, you know, she's not that kind of a friend. She forgets her birthday. And so she's convinced that her husband's out there somewhere and he will return when he can. And that's her proof. So she's, you know, her love for him is so strong, and she won't give up. And I think that really is, and even though she's got everyone around her, including her sons, telling her, just come on, let's, you know, he's gone. Let's move on with life. And, you know, her love for him is so strong that she won't move on. And it's funny, it's not really a love story per se. It's more of a contemporary suspense, because there's a lot going on in it. And but that's the underlying theme there, that, you know, her love is so strong that she won't give up until she has answers, or that she finds him.
So what is your process when you're writing? Do you kind of schedule time every single day? Like, can you say, okay, well, I can write today between 10 and 2, there's nobody home or whatever? And do you actually sit down and you can just turn it on, or do you have to be in a certain mood?
Well, again, I'm not much of a planner, so I don't have a plan for when I write. But if I am in the writing mode where I am, you know, working on a manuscript, I do tend to write every day, but I write at odd times of the day. My rule is if I wake up in the middle of the night, it could be 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning, even if it's dark out, if I wake up and my eyes are open, then I have to go downstairs and find my laptop and get back to writing. I could also stay up, you know, start writing at 11 o'clock at night. I don't really have a problem, you know, picking up where I left off. I will sit down, I'll reread the last few pages that I wrote, and then I'm off and running. So, and I really do think that once I walk away from my laptop, I do think my subconscious continues to work on the story, so that when I do sit down, I've got a lot that I need to get down, you know, on the computer. So I don't really have a set time of day that I write. I'm kind of all over the place. And I'll also move where I write. I don't like sitting in the same spot. So it's nice when nobody's home, because then I don't have to stay in my office. I can go find a little nook someplace. I usually have a dog or two with me that curl up next to me or at my feet, which is so nice to do. And when it's nice, I might take my laptop outside, but I'm all over the house, all over, you know, just, I get bored, you know, sitting in the same spot. So I do tend to move, but I do also have, I usually have a word count that I'm shooting for that day. And I'm pretty consistent with that. I shoot for that. That's, I have found, you know, I initially tried having a certain time that I, was to sit down and write, but I found for me, I'm a numbers gal initially. So if I have a certain word count, then I usually do get to that every day, which is good. And I can see some real serious progress over time pretty quickly. So I'm not real organized about it, but I get it done, and in all different places.
Hmm. Do you ever have kind of a block or a time when you're unable to write?
I knock on wood, I never have. I do go back and just kind of refresh my memory to where the story was going. And I really do think my subconscious works on it. So I sit down and just start writing. I did have an interesting experience with the third book in the Precipice series. I found that individual scenes would come to me that would then turn into chapters. So as they would come to me, I would write them down, but they were in no particular order, which was a little puzzling. And I learned later. So then once I got it all written, I had to go back and literally puzzle and put the pieces where they needed to be. And I learned later that's what that's called. It's called puzzling, and it is a method, but it was a rather frustrating method because, you know, I figured when the scenes came to me, I needed to write them down so I wouldn't forget them. But it was challenging to then reassemble the scenes where they needed to go and have it make sense. So I spent a lot of time rereading sections, moving them around, rereading the book, you know, and by the time I handed it off to my editor, I had spent entirely too much time doing that, but I wanted it to be in the best shape it could be for her. And I explained to her what I had done and said, you know, just let me know if I've got to move things around and, you know, rewrite this thing. And apparently I did okay, because when it came back from the first pass, I did not have to move anything around, but it was a very challenging way of writing. And I hope my brain doesn't do that again, because it was very inefficient.
It's an interesting process, what happens. Yeah. Do you ever look back at your first works and your first books and kind of want to redo them or do something different?
Yes, I think we all do as writers. I think when we go back and look at what we've done previously, I think we feel like we're never done. And when I am forced to go back and reread sections of a book because I need to find a detail that I have to carry through, that's when I start thinking, oh, maybe I would have done something a little differently next time. But, you know, it's that's just part of the process, I think. And I think also we develop as writers too, so that, you know, I think my most recent book is probably, you know, I would probably have fewer things to go back and try to rewrite, you know, 5 years from now, just because I've I've grown as a writer, and my style has evolved. And so, you know, it could be what I want to change in the previous books. Perhaps it's just style, and you know, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just, you know, my style has evolved. And so, but I think that's just something we as writers do. We're always looking to make it the best that it can be, and make it the most entertaining for our readers. And so we're always looking to improve, which is a good thing. But I think, you know, I think going through that exercise of, you know, trying to rewrite something, I think perhaps we could spend our time, you know, better by writing something new and, you know, getting that next book out for our readers who are looking for the next book.
How much research did you have to do? Do you do a lot of research for your fiction books?
Fortunately, I don't have to do a lot because I'm writing about places that I love and am very, very familiar with. And, but there, you know, from time to time, I do have to do some research. And certainly over time, that has gotten easier with Google. Mm. But I think the biggest challenge with The Woman Underwater was I have a scene with a helicopter. And I honestly can't remember the last time I was in a helicopter. I was probably a baby. So I had to do a lot of research online just so I would know how to describe it, you know, describe what she was seeing and what the pilot was doing. And so I did as much research as I could, and I wrote the scene a few times. And then when I was finished and I thought I had it the way, you know, where I want it to be, I sent it off to a good friend of mine who used to fly helicopters in the Army. And he took a look at it, and I thought, oh, I just kind of, you know, held my breath. I thought, oh, he's going to rip this to pieces, you know. But he sent it back and just changed one word. So I must have done, you know, enough research to make it believable, because I was also writing it from a, you know, a layperson's, you know, perspective as well. So it didn't have to be, you know, my terminology didn't have to be exact, you know, but I could still describe what the pilot was doing, what I was seeing on the inside of the helicopter. So apparently I did enough research to get that right.
Mm. So who are your inspirations?
Well, in terms of like who I read.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Whoever inspires you when you are writing, it doesn't always have to be readers or books, but that's usually what it is.
Well, actually for me, I would have to say my inspirations are, I mean, I do love to read, and I've got some, there are several authors that I love to read, and I look for the next book, and I read all over the place. All different genres. And, you know, I read a lot of nonfiction. I love reading about, you know, travel and actually the airline industry too. I just finished a book on my Nook, which was called, Attention All Passengers by William McGee. And he's a big, airline passenger advocate. And, it was a very interesting book. I've always been interested in that sort of thing. And then I jumped from that to, a book I'm reading now that's a nonfiction book about a woman who used to be a lighthouse keeper up in Maine. So I'm just fascinated with lighthouses and I'm just getting into that now. I've read a lot of Marcia Clark, you know, she was the head prosecutor for the O.J. Simpson case, and a brilliant woman and a brilliant writer. Her first book was Without a Doubt, and she talks about the case and the background, and it's fascinating to read, you know, from her perspective. And then after she finished that book, she came out with two different murder mystery series, one from the perspective of the prosecutor and one from the perspective of the defense attorney. And she knows, you know, the ins and outs of the system. And really, and she's a brilliant writer, and I love her mysteries. But I also feel like I'm getting a sneak peek into what goes on behind the scenes. And it's fascinating to read. So I'm anxiously awaiting her next novel as well. But as far as inspiration, and I also have a lot of, you know, friends that are mystery writers, and I support them. And I've got Sherry Randall writes cozy mysteries, and Michelle Dorsey writes a mystery series that's also set in the Caribbean. I love being in the Caribbean, so I love writing about it and you know, setting my mysteries there, and I love reading about it. So I've got a lot of different genres, and what I always say is, if it's well written, then I'll read it. I'll give it a try. Although I did recently, my son really wanted me to read a book on Bitcoin. I struggled with that one. And I mean, true confessions, I did not get through it. My husband got through it, but I struggled with that one. So I put it to the side because it was keeping me from reading other books that I really wanted to get to. And I say that I'm going to get back to it. And I think I have the best of intentions, but I'm not sure I will, because there are so many other books that I would love to read. But in terms of inspiration, I really think my inspirations come from the people that I interact with, life that goes on around me, travel, you know, because of my, you know, the locations that I set my books in. Travel always inspires me. When I was starting to write the sequel to my first book, The Murder on the Precipice. And so this book was set in Maine on the, you know, rocky coast of Maine, in an old family run inn. I was writing the sequel, and I always bring a pad of paper with me, or to jot down notes, or my laptop when we travel. And we happened to take another trip down to the Caribbean, down to the Virgin Islands. And I was sitting out on the deck, you know, overlooking the beautiful warm turquoise water and the watching the tropical breezes go through the palm trees. And I'm trying to write about Maine, the coast of Maine, and it wasn't working. But instead, this other story just kind of came crashing into my head. And so I flipped the page on the notepad I had, and I just started frantically writing what was going through my head. And the story was set in the Caribbean. And that turned out to be my second book. I ended up having to put the sequel to the main mystery aside and write the story that was in the Caribbean, just because it was demanding to be written. So the inspiration was pretty strong there. And I'm so glad I did, because then I ended up with a sequel to that one too. So I allowed the settings to direct my inspiration, and then people, you know, the people watching and just, in fact, one of my characters in this latest release, The Woman Underwater, Millie, is the protagonist's mother. And she is such a character. And she is based on a woman that just passed my table one day a few years ago when I was doing a book signing. And she was just so colorful and so interesting to watch. And we exchanged a few words, and it was enough for me to then jot some notes down. And I said, oh, I've got to put her in a book in the future. And so she ended up in The Woman Underwater. And it's just a character. She's very colorful. She's got the beginnings of Alzheimer's. So sometimes she doesn't remember things, which can be, that's not always a funny situation. But in this book, she does provide some comedic relief in the suspense. But it's fun to have her in there. And I actually had an advanced reviewer say that she enjoyed Millie so much that she thought Millie should have her own book after this one. So who knows, there may be a spinoff with Millie.
Yeah, you never know. Well, Marcia Clark, yeah. She's been on the show. Yeah, she's quite the writer. Yeah. Now, do you have a website or social media set up for readers and that to follow or interact with?
Absolutely. My website is just my name, pennygochen.com, and just pennygochen.com. So I've got a website there that readers can learn more about my books and also connect with me and sign up for my newsletter if they're so inclined. But I'm on also all the social media, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Goodreads, BookBub. And you can just, you know, just search my name and I'll pop up for sure. And then my books are available wherever your favorite retailer is, on all the the usual online retailers like, you know, barnesandnoble.com, Amazon, but also on my website. I do have a link where people can, readers can click to find an independent bookstore near them, because I love supporting the independent bookstores. They're such community gems, and we really need to support them and keep them in business. So many, you know, did not make it through the pandemic, and it was very sad. But I think it's so important to try to support the ones that are still around or have popped up since then, and because they're just a wonderful resource for being able to find great books.
Yeah. Well, of course, we'll have all of your information up on our website as well, so people can find you with one click. Do you ever look at your reviews?
Well, I usually look at them with one eye open. I kind of peek at them. And then once I see how many stars, then I'll read them. You know, once in a while, I'll get one that's, you know, not so favorable, and I might, you know, it might sting initially, and then I might put it to the side, but then I go back to it and I read it because I want to learn from, you know, feedback. And but very often it's just a matter of, well, it just wasn't for me. It wasn't the book that, you know, I thought it was going to be, and it just wasn't, you know, something that interested me. And so it's not a horrible review. It just wasn't for that person. So I do read them because, you know, most of them are quite lovely, and it's great to get feedback. And, but you know, sometimes you get the occasional one that does sting, but it's just temporary.
Well, so we've enjoyed having you on the show. Now, of course, the book is called The Woman Underwater, and that's the latest book from our guest, Penny Gochin. Thank you for being here.
It was my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, Penny.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.